In 1996, Seattle police faced an unusual challenge. A severely wounded dog witnessed the murder of his two owners. Could the dog identify the killers, and if so, how? December 9th, 1996, Seattle, Washington. It was going to be a special day for 22-year-old Raquel Rivera. She was starting a new job as a receptionist in a downtown office.
I seen her the night before, and she was really excited about it. She was a little sick, but she was worried about she was going to make it to work or not. She was really excited.
Raquel shared this house in Seattle's South Park section with her longtime boyfriend, Jay Johnson. The two had been together since high school and were talking about getting married.
I loved Jay. He was a great guy. I loved him. He was very, very good to my daughter, you know. They were good for each other.
Just after dawn, neighbors heard gunshots coming from the couple's home.
Probably about four or five shots, then a break, and then maybe about six more shots.
When police arrived, they found the front door off its hinges. The windows had been shattered by bullets. Inside were two bodies.
The only thing we have right now is that we found two people in the house, a male and a female, both shot.
Raquel Rivera's mother, who lived only a block away, got the phone call. Every parent dreads.
When I got there was police and everybody. They wouldn't let me in the apartment. And I said, it's gotta be Raquel.
The bodies were positively identified as Raquel and Jay. The couple's dog, Chief, a six-month-old Labrador mix, was also shot.
I poked my head around the corner, saw that the dog was up against the door. He was obviously in pain. He was growling. There were blood traces all over the door where he had smeared blood against that wall. I said, let's get everybody out, get animal control in here, and get the dog out.
This particular case would rate as probably the most severely injured dog that we've ever seen from a gunshot, just by virtue of the fact that it received such a full-on frontal bullet right through the front of the nose.
Unfortunately, despite undergoing emergency surgery, the dog died. An autopsy was performed. It revealed the dog had been shot twice, a non-fatal shot in the shoulder and a bullet through his muzzle.
You could liken it to running face first into the front end of a truck bumper on that, in terms of this, given what we could see in terms of the bullet trauma that did to the front of his muzzle and his face.
The evidence told homicide investigators that the killer was searching for something.
Cabinets have been gone through, doors have been opened, the bed was tossed around. So clearly the perpetrators wanted to find something, not just eliminate the lives and witnesses therein, but they were after something.
There was no finesse to this. It was a blitz-style attack. They're in, they shoot. They shoot the dog, they shoot the owners of the dog. Mr. Johnson was shot several times in the legs, which is indicative of someone trying to extract information before.
The coroner would later describe the murders as execution-style killings. The entire community was asking who would have killed this young couple who had no known enemies. The only clues to the murder of Jay Johnson and Raquel Rivera were a smeared footprint at the couple's front door and some 9mm shell casings. Blood spatter was on the walls, floor, and on the inside of the door. police discovered that a 15-year-old boy living across the street in an apartment building had seen the shooting.
This person described them as Samoan males dressed in black, very large men, and one wearing a bandana.
The boy said the two men kicked open the front door, shot the dog, and then moved into the house. The witness could no longer see them, but he heard the firing.
He saw the dog, he heard two shots, and he heard the barking, and then he heard the dog's yelping and the dog's screams.
The boy said the men left minutes later and drove away in a red Camaro driven by a third Samoan man. Police suspected the men were members of a local gang, Mad Pack.
There's a large Samoan community in Seattle, our law-abiding, hardworking people. But with every group, you've got a criminal element. And the Mad Pack made up a large portion of their criminal element.
They were a gang in the sort of worst sense of the word.
Just 3 days earlier in Seattle's Chinatown, there had been a similar shooting. The victim, Johnny Paik, survived the attack.
That being a Samoan male sitting in a red car, a very large Samoan male.
Shell casings from the Chinatown shooting were compared to those taken from Jay and Raquel's apartment. They matched. Police now scoured the city looking for any Samoans driving a red Camaro. Amazingly, they didn't have to look far. On the afternoon following Jay and Raquel's murder, police noticed a red Camaro slowly driving past the murder scene.
Driving back to the crime scene and checking things out is not an uncommon thing for a suspect to do. It's the old return to the scene of the crime cliche, and it happens.
The driver of the red Camaro was Charles Nico, a known member of the Mad Pack gang. Although Nico denied any involvement in the shooting, the 15-year-old eyewitness identified him as the driver of the getaway vehicle. When threatened with the death penalty, Nico finally told police what happened. He said the motive was drugs. The Mad Pack gang members heard that Jay and Raquel had cocaine in their house, and they decided to steal it. But after breaking in, the couple said they had no cocaine, and then the men started shooting. Nico identified the shooters as 22-year-old Kenneth Leoluala'oli, whose street name was Sabo Claus, and 24-year-old George Tuilafano, whose street name was Scooby. Both were high-ranking members of the Mad Pack gang.
I already knew who they were because, you know, they ran around South Park. They were bullies. They were always beating everybody up.
Both men denied any involvement in the shooting and said they had alibis. A search of their apartment did not produce the 9mm murder weapon. The smeared footprint on the front door could not be matched to either suspect. And 8 red stains found on the right sleeve of Sabo Claus' jacket was sent for DNA testing, but it wasn't the victim's blood.
They get a result that is not human-based because the genotype does not come back to genes associated with a human being at all. They then are scratching their heads with, hey, what's going on here?
In fact, investigators weren't sure what it was. With no forensic evidence to tie the suspects to the crime, Seattle police feared a conviction might be impossible. As Jay Johnson and Raquel Rivera were laid to rest side by side in a Seattle cemetery, their families demanded justice. To decipher exactly what happened at the crime scene, Investigator O'Keefe needed to distinguish between the dog's blood spatter and that of Jay and Raquel.
I requested through my sergeant, Cindy Tallman, that an officer follow the dog to the vet and draw blood from the dog immediately. My thinking at the time was to differentiate between the human blood at the scene and the dog blood.
The blood spatter and bullet casings in the apartment and the eyewitness account of the 15-year-old boy who lived across the street gave police a rough idea of what had happened. After the intruders kicked open the door, the dog was shot in the shoulder. Then the men went into the bedroom where they shot Raquel.
Raquel, I'm gonna kill you!
They took Jay into an adjoining room and shot him in the leg while demanding the couple's cocaine. One of the men left to shoot Raquel once more. And when Jay said the couple never had any drugs, they killed him. Despite his shoulder wound, Chief again tried to protect his owners and ran into the bedroom to attack the killers. But why wasn't the victim's blood on the suspect's clothes? Investigators say both Jay and Raquel were shot from a distance and were also wearing clothes, pajamas and t-shirts, which absorbed the blood spatter. But with Chief, there was nothing to absorb the blood.
He was short-haired and had not long hairs around the muzzle or face or neck area, so any kind of serious wound causing a lot of blood is obviously going to spill or spray or go off. It's not gonna cling to the coat because there's such a short, smooth coat, it's gonna roll right off.
Chief was very close to Kenneth when he was shot, and we know also that Chief was shot in the muzzle area.
Now police discovered the possible key to the mysterious red stains on the right sleeve of Sabo Claw's jacket.
Detective O'Keefe and myself decided to see if we're dealing with a non-human source, namely a dog. So with that, we needed to seek out laboratories that do DNA testing with non-humans. And through some research, we came upon a lab in Davis, California, headed by Dr. Joy Halverson.
Dr. Joy Halverson is an expert in investigating the parentage of world-class show dogs. Championship-caliber show dogs can be worth thousands of dollars, and where there's money, there's often corruption. Dishonest breeders engage in a practice known as litter loading, where pups from inferior dogs are mixed in with pups from champion dogs and sold at inflated prices. Knowledgeable buyers now analyze the DNA profiles of their new pups in order to confirm their dog's championship parentage.
Dog DNA is exactly like human DNA. The only difference would be we use a different set of DNA markers, but in terms of its chemical properties and the way it behaves with these testing procedures, it's exactly the same.
Police suspected the red spots on Sabo Claw's right sleeve came from the victim's dog, Chief. Dr. Halverson cut out a piece of the sleeve with the red stains on it and analyzed it with a PCR-based DNA test.
A little piece of that fabric is taken and put into a tube, and various buffers and so on are added to it. Blood cells will come off the fabric into the liquid, and then the various treatments are done to extract the DNA from that.
The results were consistent with the blood from a dog. But was the blood from the victim's dog, Chief? Dr. Halverson compared the DNA markers from the blood on the suspect's sleeve to the blood taken from Chief during his autopsy. The result was a perfect match. The blood on Sabo Claw's right sleeve was the blood of Chief. Prosecutor Tim Bradshaw knew he'd face a challenge from defense lawyers.
We were unable to find any other case, homicide case in the country, where canine-based DNA had been admitted into evidence.
The defense lawyers not only would challenge the admissibility of the canine DNA evidence, they described it as hocus-pocus, and boldly predicted their clients would walk free. The two gang members charged with killing Jay Johnson and Raquel Rivera were facing first-degree murder charges. Prosecutors not only had the teenaged eyewitness from across the street who identified the two in a police lineup, they also had DNA evidence from the victim's dog on Kenneth Leilualaa Ali'i's sleeve. Also on his sleeve were hairs. They were not human. But they were compared to Chief's hair and found to be consistent. This wasn't as good as the DNA evidence, but certainly wouldn't hurt the prosecution's case. The main suspect, Kenneth Leilualaa Ali'i, became so disruptive, he had to be restrained in a wheelchair for the 8-week trial. He taunted the judge, the family members, saying he'd never get convicted.
Every time we walk in, he would just look at us and laugh at us and, you know, throw kisses at us when the girls would walk in. I hate him.
Prosecutors presented their theory of how the murders were committed based on the blood spatter evidence. Prosecutors believe that the suspects kicked open Jay and Raquel's door and immediately were confronted by the dog Chief. They shot the dog in the shoulder. After killing both Rachel and Jay, Chief once again tried to protect his owners. Chief was shot at point-blank range. The blowback blood spatter landed on Ken's right sleeve. When presented with the DNA evidence linking Ken's jacket to the dog, the judge ruled that legally, the animal DNA was the same as human DNA. If the testing was the same, then so was its value as evidence.
We took advantage of the fact that the science is no different than the human testing that's done now in the forensic community. And there's nothing groundbreaking about it. It's just a different set of DNA markers developed for dogs.
It was the first time animal DNA was used in the United States as evidence in a criminal case. Kenneth Leilualaa Ali'i took the stand and said he had an explanation for the dog blood on his sleeve.
He told the jurors that a few nights prior to the murders, he was at a dance club in Tacoma, got into a fist fight with another man there, and that thereby explains the blood. That did give me an opportunity to ask him whether the man he was fighting with had hit him with a dog, and he really couldn't explain that.
After 12 hours of deliberation, the jury sentenced both men to life in prison without parole. Kenneth Leilualaa Ali'i laughed as the verdict was read. But the last laugh was reserved for Chief, the victim's courageous dog.
I had a few puns about our case in Chief, but the third victim here, Chief, was exceedingly important to our case. And, we're grateful to that, but we're also, this will sound a little hokey, but grateful to the scientific community for making a contribution to justice, and that's exactly what happened here.
Jay and Raquel had bought Chief for protection. Little did they know that he would someday bring their killers to justice.
One a piece of evidence, the one victim who could never speak, ended up providing perhaps the most eloquent of testimony. And that was from the DNA profile that clearly placed defendant Liwalahlihi at the crime scene.
The verdict brought small satisfaction to Raquel's mother, who now makes a point of keeping a dog around the house. Her only child, who she raised by herself, is dead for no reason, leaving a great void in her life that no amount of justice can ever fill.
We were so close. Her and I, as she was growing up, just her and I.
What I learned from this case is that if it's alive, it has DNA. Detectives can use DNA in their cases in ways that we never thought of 10 years ago. There is plant DNA, there is animal DNA. Every domestic animal has a DNA databank now. The Department of Interior has a laboratory where they do DNA on wild species.
Just from my own experience of owning animals, I mean, I'm sure if I looked on my clothing right now, I'd find some animal hairs. And if somebody kidnapped me and put me in the trunk of their car, they'd probably a few of those hairs would end up on the trunk of their car. So if someone's being alert and thinking about these things, I think they're valuable sources of evidence.
And so it's a constant reminder for investigators to be vigilant in your approach to any sort of crime scene, and to be quite open-minded and imaginative about what application you can do as far as what science is available, because to a large degree, science is leading the way, and we got to keep up.